This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 338 for Wednesday, November 13th, 2019. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Joining me this week is Lou Page, busy zombie lord on all the social media that matters, and co-host of Zombies Ate My Podcast. Welcome back to the show, my friend.
It's been far too long.
I agree. It's not been 8 weeks. It's been like 4 weeks, though, right?
It's been 8 weeks.
Has it really? Did we miss the Halloween episode?
I think that was the last time I was on, was just it was like 2 weeks before Halloween.
Okay, so it's only been 4 weeks. I think it's just that October was a long month.
I know that the last time we were supposed to record, you were sick.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so maybe we had you on in September.
I think that was the last time I was on in September.
Because October was a light month for me podcast-wise because of HalCon, so that would make sense. I do try to hit everything every week, but you never know. This whole, like, getting older stuff, the memory is the first thing to go, they tell me, but I don't know. We'll see how we land on the other side of this. One of the things I always enjoy about having you on the show is because you are tapped into the gaming scene more than most people that I have on the podcast, and since we now have Remembrance Day behind us, Veterans Day, etc., Armistice Day, depending on where you are on the planet, a lot of heads are now turning towards the griping of the holiday decorations that, you know, Walmart was putting out, like the eve of Halloween sort of thing. But mm-hmm. The holidays are coming, and that does mean that sometimes you can get cool stuff for less. Given that you Americans have come up with this thing called Black Friday, which the rest of us really appreciate.
I hate it.
You and me both. But you know what? When you are in need of things, not necessarily, I don't use it for what it's intended for, which is holiday shopping as gifts for other people. I use get really cheap stuff for me.
Yeah, that's kind of what I use it for as well.
Yeah, I like to put a lot more thought into my Christmas gifts than I do just like buying something that's on sale. I try to come up with something a little bit more personal and all that kind of stuff. But reason I bring it up is because I don't remember where I saw this. I feel like it was maybe a tweet or something that went by, but Steam's Halloween, autumn and winter sale dates were quote unquote leaked. I don't know if they were leaked as much as they were just like released.
they were leaked.
Oh, were they?
Steam does not like to give that stuff out in advance. And some website that tracks the back-end database of Steam noted that there was a expected price drop on a bunch of stuff for those dates. And that's how they figured out that there was a sale going on those days.
Right. Okay. Well, the Halloween sale has already gone by, which was October 28th to November 1st.
It was not so hot.
No, I wouldn't expect it to be. If anything, you'd kind of think that they're going to put their money into the autumn sale, which is November 26th. Surprise, surprise. I think anybody could have guessed that it was going to be Thanksgiving weekend in the States. That goes to December 3rd. And then the winter sale, which is, it's funny. I usually think of them as a Christmas sale, but it's interesting that it's Halloween, autumn, and winter, not Black Friday and Christmas. Like I like that's how that's been worded.
The autumn sales are usually pretty good. If there's something really expensive that you're interested in when it comes to Steam, I highly recommend you wait until that winter sale. The winter sale is when they really knock prices down.
Yeah, it also looks like it's the longest. It's December 19th through January 2nd. So you've got not only Christmas, but also Boxing Day and New Year's Day all in there for your lounging at home, relaxing, and playing video games. So I have just ordered the last parts for my new gaming PC. It should be here tomorrow, I think.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So, I mean, that it's not coming assembled. It's like Johnny Five. It's very much disassembled, and I have to get my friend John, who has been MIA but said he was willing to help me put it together, to do that. So I don't think I'm going to have it for this weekend. I think maybe this weekend, hopefully, cross my fingers, will be when he puts it together, and then I'll have it for the following weekend. I want it, hopefully, knock on wood, in my hands before the autumn sale. Not like I'm going to be spending a lot, but you never know. There might be some cool thing that I want to check out. I also have a couple things that I've purchased already that I can't play just because they were on sale. They're half price, like No Man's Sky, and yeah, I just can't play it. So what's nice about when this computer is done is that I have games that I have been excited to play that are ready. They just need to be downloaded and installed. And so so that's going to be fun. But because of this new PC world that I'll be entering into, I really like the idea of keeping my eyes peeled when it comes to this upcoming winter sale. Because I remember last year looking at things, probably for this podcast, but also just kind of like general gaming interest, and being like, man, some of this stuff looks really fun, and it's obviously at really good prices, but I cannot play any of it because it's all for PC, not Mac. And so I'll have options this year, which is going to be nice.
That's what Steam wishlists are for. I won't lie. I think I've said this before on the podcast. I have 1,500 games on Steam. And that's not an exaggeration. I'm just really glad that they've changed the interface. Because the interface from the old end used to crash on me when I would try and load the thumbnail art for all of my games. It would literally crash my Steam.
They were trying to tell you something, Lou.
Yeah. And my wish list is like 500 games. So whenever, every day when a sale happens, because Steam does sales pretty much every day, I get an email every day being like, hey, five more games from your wish list are on sale. Hey, five more games. And I'm like, yeah, not a price I'm willing to pay yet. Not a price I'm willing to pay yet. It's a problem.
You want to know how many games are on my wish list?
Five.
You're close too.
Yeah.
Industries of Titan, which is not out yet. It comes out in 2020, it looks like. And Rise of Industry, which I would not pay $34 for. That is something that I would check out if it was like half or less.
There's a lot of games that like I want to play, but they're either in a niche kind of game I don't normally play, or they're like a game that I've heard good things about, but I'm skeptical on it. And I'm not going to pay $40 or $50 for something I'm not sure about. So I try to keep, if I'm going to spend buy something like that, it's got to be under 20.
Yeah.
So my wish list is full of stuff that it's like, when I see it at a price point I want, I'll buy it.
That's $33.99 Canadian, by the way. So that would be 25-ish for you.
Yeah.
But Rise of Industry is something that did have a demo and does work on Mac. So I've tried it, and that's why it's on my list. Because it was a demo that was deep enough that I felt like I had a good handle on the game, but did not want to reinvest more time in the demo because I felt like if I was going to be doing a time management, like industry, you know, pipeline game, I'd want to give it a good go, at which point I'd rather have the full game. The other one that's on my list, which is not a Steam release, is Satisfactory, which is exclusively on Epic Games.
Yep.
But that's really, and there, I got a couple of games on Epic for free over the last.
Oh yeah. That's how they get you.
Yeah.
They're giving away those free games so that you can stay logging into their system.
Well, I already had an Epic account, I think, cause way back in the day I tried like Fortnite for a hot minute and decided, nope, not for me.
Not for me. Yeah.
But the other games, and Epic has had quite a few exclusive titles. I think that's also where, Borderlands 3 is for PC.
Yep. So Borderlands 3 will be on Steam next year.
Oh, okay. So really, depending on just when I get around to it.
All of Epic's exclusives have had a 6 month to a year before they can be put on Steam. I have nothing really against Epic. I've just not been a huge fan of the way they do business.
Mm-hmm.
There's been some indie developers that promised their games to Steam when they did their Kickstarters. And Epic has swooped in and said, hey, no. We'll give you $2 million for your game, but you need to be exclusive to Epic. And the developers have been like, yeah, as much as we'd like to take that money, we really, it's not worth the bad press we would get.
The blowback, yeah.
For being exclusive to you, because we've already promised Steam keys to everybody. Maybe we can like co-release with you. And Epic was like, if we can't get you exclusive, then we don't want you. Have a nice day.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been like, that's kind of dirty pool.
Yeah.
Throw money at the...
It's hard business. I mean,
It is.
Yeah. I mean, they're throwing their weight around, which is really not surprising.
Yeah.
I don't know enough about the situation to really speak about it intelligently, but I've also heard that in that light, when Epic does work with a company and publish a game, it also sounds like they pay people very well and they treat employees very well. So
they treat their employees well, from what I understand. But there's been this other motif with Epic where they give the developer and the publisher and all of them, they give them a bigger cut of the, they take a smaller cut.
Right, that's what it is, yeah.
And the gripe has been like, oh, we only take like 12 or 15% and Steam takes 30. An article, I think it was by Rock Paper Shotgun maybe, there was an expose about that because it was making Steam look really bad. And some guy who was curious as to what the real numbers are reached out, and they're right. Steam does take 30%. But if you release on Nintendo Switch, Nintendo gets 30%. If you put it out on PlayStation, PlayStation gets 30%. If you put it out on Xbox, Microsoft gets 30%. The standard across everything is 30%.
Right.
That Epic was painting it like Steam was doing something bad. And really, Steam's just doing what everybody does.
Right. But Steam would be Epic's biggest competitor compared to... As far as PC games goes, not console, right?
So, exactly, exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's a PR spin, yeah.
Right. That's exactly what it is. And I'm like,
Yeah. Well, I mean, at any rate, I do have a couple of things that I am interested in trying, and I'm hoping... Well, one, because I have No Man's Sky already purchased, waiting in the wings, pardon the pun... for me to play on the new PC. Between that and the time I devote to Minecraft because of the Spawnchunks podcast and everything else I'm doing right now, I'm not going to get the time to play a lot of games between now and Christmas. So really the best thing for me to do is possibly wait for some of these titles that just came out in the last month or two or will come out in the next month to die down a little bit and then perhaps hit a bit of a sale on the winter sale on Steam. I am looking at, and I don't even know if it's available on Steam, but the Outer Worlds.
I hear that is awesome.
Yeah, I'm talking to a couple people and I've seen a little bit. It's weirdly, I've tried to watch it on Twitch a little bit. And every time I see someone streaming, they're just talking to an NPC and it is boring. I've not actually watched gameplay.
Just so you know, most of that game is talking to NPCs.
Okay, well, that's good to know then. So maybe I need to just kind of like hunker down and watch a stream for an hour. And kind of see, because I didn't want to. I didn't want to get into it because it felt spoilery, and I was like, "Well, I really want to play this." So,
well, from what I understand, is a lot of the game is dialogue driven, and they give you lots and lots of choices in the dialogue trees to the point where you can probably play the game 3 or 4 times and never experience the same interaction twice.
Right. Okay. Well, that's good to know. That means that I can probably watch it and not spoil it.
Yeah. If that's the kind of thing you're interested in, I would highly recommend keeping an eye out for Fallout 4. The Game of the Year edition will probably be on sale for at least $20.
Right on.
That's very much in the same vein as The Outer Worlds.
I don't know if it was Fallout 4, but it was, I think it was one of the Fallout versions. The team from that and the team from Mass Effect is basically the people that made the Outer Worlds. So,
It's been made by the team that made Fallout New Vegas.
Okay. So I understand, like I liked Mass Effect. I played all three of those and there's a lot of dialogue in that too. But there was also a lot of action. And so as long as it's that kind of a balance, I'll be a happy camper because I'm fine with that. It also seems like the kind of thing that I could stream quite easily, which is good. So
yeah.
Speaking of streaming, I have had a few things come across my bigger screen here at home. And I know you have actually been watching the same stuff, so this should be an interesting conversation.
Yeah.
But first, I want to talk about the services, because we've had a couple of things drop in the last little while. Currently, we've got Disney Plus just launched yesterday in Canada. I believe it also in the US as well.
Yep.
I've had very limited time with it because, of course, I've only watched one show last night, went straight to The Mandalorian, as one should. We will not be spoiling anything, by the way, here today. So it just came out yesterday, so we're not going to be talking about it at length. Not that you really can get too much into it, because only episode one came out yesterday.
Yeah, and I wouldn't really say there's not much to spoil. It was really fast. Like, I felt like it just started getting rolling, and it went, oh, credits. And I went, that's it?
Yeah.
Really?
I will say that I enjoyed the twist at the very, very end.
I think most people did.
Yeah.
I think there's also a reason they did not show that in any of these trailers.
Oh, thank God. That's one thing I loved about the trailer for The Mandalorian is that they didn't reveal, like, after seeing the first episode, the trailers tell you nothing. They really don't give you much compared to what the show does, which I really enjoyed. So, but Disney Plus is out. I can't get it on my set-top box that I'm aware. So I am, we'll say, quote unquote, stuck streaming it from my teeny tiny little iPhone SE up onto my Apple TV, because most of my stuff.
Is that what you use? Do you use an Apple?
Most of my stuff is Mac, because I used to work at an Apple store. Like, so some of the newer stuff, like the computer and the phone, I bought when I was working there. But the Apple TV I've had for years. And just, I find that the interface is just simple. And at the time, it was iTunes movies that I would be maybe renting once in a while, Netflix, YouTube, and that was it. Only in recent years has Crave been a thing for HBO. And now Amazon Prime Video, there's an app on the Apple TV. But there's no Disney Plus app on the Apple TV. I'm assuming on the newer Apple TVs, there probably is.
I think there might be. I'm not a huge Apple guy, but I know they've been pitching it to me on my Roku for months.
Right.
So even before it was available, they were trying to get me to download it.
Right. I don't have a store, right? It's just the software update. So I'm waiting to see if my old Apple TV gets a software update that includes Disney Plus. I doubt it will, because on the newer Apple TVs, the one they're like twice the cost. It's stupid. There's an app store, so you can go and get the apps that you want. But I mean, it was no big deal. My point being that I downloaded the Disney Plus app onto my phone very quickly. Logged in, having already signed up on the website, because it was easier to type all that stuff in on the website, and then proceeded to watch The Mandalorian by airplaying it to my TV in 1080p. It was fine, like just not even a glitch. I will say, granted, this is an iOS feedback, but the Disney Plus app on iOS is pretty slick. Like, it is. They don't overload you with a bunch of buttons. There's play, pause, you know, choose this one, watch the trailer, watch the show, AirPlay.
It was
real simple.
I have found one problem thus far with Disney Plus. And that is, I was looking for, I got it because I wanted to watch The Mandalorian. Erica has zero interest.
Right.
She is not a huge Star Wars fan. She'd rather watch Star Trek. And so when I added the Disney Plus, she was like, okay, we're going to go look for stuff that I want to watch on here if we're going to have this for a few months. And I said, okay. There was stuff that, like, it would say, click Marvel, and I would click Marvel. And then I would scroll through, and I'd be like, I heard that the old 90s X-Men cartoon is on here. And I would scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll, and it wasn't there. But then when I clicked a different thing that was, like, all animated stuff, it showed up under all animated stuff. Like, not the whole library is not showing up as I browsed.
So I think the reason for that is because the entire library is massive. And I think from what I've done in a similar fashion when I scroll through that stuff, it's like, well, not only are these not all the Marvel movies, but they're not even in order. Like, it's not in any kind of logical order whatsoever. Like,
nope.
You know, like, Avengers Ultron comes up before Endgame. It's like, why? I don't want to watch that one first. Like, I want to watch the one that I only just saw in theaters. So what I'm guessing is that, similar to services like Netflix, where check out, you know, these action films, and they're really just recommending stuff that they think you're going to like. And yeah, and I feel like
It's even like this on their website, because mm-hmm. I was trying to add to a watch list for their website so that next time I wanted to watch something, we'd just go in, click the watch list, and click the next thing on it. And it was like there was stuff I knew was available because I had read about it prior to the launch, and it wasn't there. And I was like, I had to actually go to the search at one point and type the name of what I was looking for, and it popped right up. And I was like, gee. What I was looking for was something that I thought would be front and center, or something that more than me would be interested in. Like Disney has that new DuckTales show that's been out for like 2 or 3 years.
Oh, right.
And I had only seen the first couple episodes because they put them up on YouTube a couple years ago. And I was like, I think when Disney Plus comes, that's what we'll watch. And I had to dig to find it. And I was like, really? I would think that something like this would be up front and center to sell it to kids.
Yeah. I haven't explored any kind of like, you know, kid zone, like anything that's like meant for the really the younger kids.
We've watched about 6 episodes of the new DuckTales show. It's kid oriented, but we've laughed our heads off at it.
Oh, I'm sure, like, it's good.
The gags were very much more modern takes of what the old cartoon used to be when we were kids.
Mm. So what I'm talking about, though, is like an actual section, like a profile for kids, you know, in an age range. Yeah. Like, for example, you wouldn't want a 5 or 8 year old watching necessarily Endgame. Like, that's not, you don't want them to stumble into that. No. Even Star Wars can be a little bit violent for that age range. So like, I'm just curious about what things they might gate. Because when I went into the Star Wars thing, I thought, oh, cool. Like, what Star Wars stuff is there? And what I'm really excited about is like, now I have access to Rebels and the new Alliance Resistance. Resistance one. And even Clone Wars, not that I'm really going to go back and watch Clone Wars, because I have seen
I've seen almost all of it. I don't know if I can go back.
If anything, it's like you might want to watch the last season only to kind of like refresh your mind on where Ahsoka ended, so that when you see her later in other stuff that it makes sense. So for me, though, I was like, where's The Last Jedi? This is odd, because again, you go to Star Wars and they list A New Hope and the original trilogy, and then they list the new ones, and then they list the prequels, and it's like, so nothing is in order. They're just presenting it in the order they think you're probably going to want to watch them, right? And so I said, well, this is weird, The Last Jedi isn't here. And so I went looking for a search, and sure enough, it came up immediately, which is something I like about the search. It's that if it's something that's owned by Disney that you would expect to be on Disney Plus, if it's not there now, it will still show up with a poster and it comes up immediately, but it says it's not coming until December 26th. And I was just like, oh, okay. So, and I also remember seeing it recently on Netflix in Canada anyway. So
yeah, it's the last title in that Netflix exclusivity deal.
Right. And that's the thing, is that there's going to be stuff that still has a license to other places that may end up trickling in later. Obviously, Disney Plus has not launched with all of their planned original series. The Mandalorian is out, but obviously there's nothing right now about the Captain America Falcon, the Falcon as Captain America with Bucky Barnes, the Winter Soldier. So like, I don't know when that's coming, and that's fine. I don't need to know. But there's certainly enough there. And I have seen a ton of my friends, all of whom are in my age range, kind of like, you know, mid 30s to early 40s, that are going back and watching classic Disney. You know, one person had Aladdin going, The Little Mermaid was posted on Facebook. Somebody else was watching Aristocats. Like, it's nice to see that kind of like dive into, they call it the vault, and they still call it the vault even in the app. And I hope they don't do what I think they're going to do, which is arbitrarily make things not available, which I think is just bullshit, considering we're living in a digital age. So it's one of those things that I'm keeping a close eye on. But as I said, the experience of using Disney Plus, signing up for it was really simple. I'm a little disappointed I had to use a credit card and I can't use PayPal, but like, whatever, it's fine. I mean, it's only $8 a month.
I was gonna say, I think that might be Canada problem, because I'm pretty sure they offered me PayPal here in the US.
It could be. That could be a thing in Canada as well. So Netflix, I've got directed at PayPal. So I guess it just depends on what deals they've had with different merchants and stuff like that. $9 a month, excuse me, $8.99 Canadian for Disney Plus, which is probably the same price as America, except for we're just getting the exchange. It's usually about 30% more in Canada for stuff like this.
I thought about taking up that deal where for like 3 years it was like $100 or something like that.
Right.
I thought about doing that, but at the rate they're trickling stuff out, I was like, I'll probably sign up until The Mandalorian is over, and then once The Mandalorian is over, I'll have probably watched everything on the back catalog I'm interested in, and I'll just wait until the next show comes out that I want to watch, and then I'll sign up again for a month or two.
And see, that's the beauty of this, is that you don't, if you want to approach this a la carte, then it's very easy for most of these services, and they will shoot themselves in the foot if they don't do this, to start and stop whenever you want. So like if I was to stay through Christmas through The Mandalorian and then stop after, I'd get, you know, another 2 weeks or whatever my subscription would run out. And then I'm just like, well, okay, I can't access it until I decide to pay again. That's fine. You know, like I'm cool with doing that. I don't really feel like I have the budget. And I mean that in two ways. Financially, I feel like it's a little bit wasteful to be throwing the better part of $45 at Netflix, Prime, and Disney Plus. Prime and Disney being the cheaper of those three. I also don't have the time. I'm subscribing to stuff that I'm just like, I don't really sit and watch more than an hour of television a day over dinner if I'm home. So it's not a lot. And so I've been looking at Netflix and Prime going like, I'm really enjoying what's on Prime right now. Will I be keeping Netflix, or will I be going more Prime Disney for a couple months just to kind of see? Because Netflix for me is $14 a month. And yeah, so
that's about what I pay. And I've also been grandfathered in on a bunch of stuff with Netflix. There's a bunch of price hikes they've done here in the United States that I've been given special pricing for. And Netflix is the thing we use the most. I continue to pay for Prime, but mostly for the shipping and not necessarily for the streaming. The streaming is like a nice, oh, hey, I wonder what movie's on Prime this month. Let's take a look. It's Friday night. We'll watch a movie instead of.
Yeah.
And that's the way we've approached Prime. But if I lost Prime streaming, it would become a thing I subscribe to, like, you know, once or twice a year for a couple of months to watch the show I want and then cancel.
The thing that I think is going to be the big difference for me, and I'm already noticing it in the last 48 hours, is that when I go and load up Disney Plus, I am looking for something specific, and I either type it in or I know right where to go, and it's at the top of the list. Like if I want to watch Star Wars or something like that, it is right there. Marvel stuff, right there. Like you tap on the logo, Marvel, Star Wars, you know, Pixar, like just whatever you're in the mood for, you can kind of like drill yourself down into something close. And then generally the movie poster, if it's a really popular film like Zootopia or Inside Out or, you know, Toy Story stuff, like they were all very, very easy to find if you're looking for a favorite. I cannot stand the browsing functions on either Prime Video or Netflix. Like I have lost 20 minutes of my Friday night trying to decide what the heck to watch on Netflix when I'm not in the mood for the, you know, the 12 things that are on my list. I'm looking for something maybe a little bit lighthearted or something a little bit different. And I just can't find it because there's just so much chaff on Netflix, stuff that I have never heard about. I wish there was a way that you could set preferences when libraries are that large to be like, no, I don't want to watch any Asian comedies. Like I just don't.
I occasionally, if it's somebody I like, will watch a stand-up comedian, but I don't love all stand-up comedians.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? I'm very particular about what type of comedians I like, or the comedians I like. And I used to be a big proponent of stand-up comedy. Like, George Carlin was like my idol as a teenager. And Netflix, I watched, you know, the new Dave Chappelle special, and all it recommends me for the next like 6 weeks are these stand-up comedians that I have zero interest in. And they're not even the same kind of comedians that Dave Chappelle is. They're just stand-up comics. I'm like, how can you be this stupid that this is what you're referring to me?
Yeah. It's like watching one rom-com and then they start to send you like, Jay and Silent Bob stuff. And you're just like, no, this is very different. This is tea and coffee. Like, this is very different experiences.
Yes.
So I'm frustrated with that sort of stuff. The other thing that I'm finding really frustrating, and I can say with confidence that it is not me or my device or my internet connection, because I pay for 100 symmetrical because I don't have cable. I put that money towards a decent internet connection. Also helps with the streaming and the podcasting. But Prime Video will go to 320p, which looks like shite on a television, at the drop of a hat. The subtitles, oh.
That is a Canada problem then, because I
Oh.
never have that issue.
So I even talked to my buddy Chad about it. I was like, dude, I know you're like because he lives out in Alberta now, and so they use Prime for shipping because they kind of have to get stuff they want,
Yep.
and so but as a result he gets Prime Video. I was like, hey, why not? We can check some stuff out. He likes Man in the High Castle and I think a couple other shows. I would imagine he's probably watching Jack Ryan,
Yeah.
but mainly for him, like you said, it's the Prime shipping that's the value, not the Prime Video. For me, I actually got a free month of Prime and then got a free month of Prime Video while I was picking up these computer parts. So I after Christmas, I am less inclined to keep Prime because I don't buy that much stuff online. So really, it's kind of very video focused for me. But the fact that the resolution drops multiple times in one episode and the subtitles will either work, not work, kind of work, or just make me use the closed captioning for the hearing impaired. To get through an episode is a roadblock. Like Jack Ryan season two is a spy show set in Venezuela. Half of the characters speak Spanish half of the time. If there's no subtitles, you don't know what's going on. And the worst part is that the way the show is presented, sometimes for drama's sake, if it's a short conversation, like say an interrogation, there's someone in the room, an actor is translating, right? So the person that's speaking Spanish says very, very few words, but then the person that is translating gives you the plot points that you need. Whereas in other situations, like watching a big television news broadcast or watching the president give a speech, they're in Spanish and it's Spanish for minutes at a time. And if you can't get the subtitles to work, you can't watch the show because. Well, I don't speak Spanish. I'm sure some people that do are fine, but it is not even close to a second language for me. And so I've been finding it extremely frustrating to the point where I just gave up Friday night. It's like I wanted to sit down, have a burger and a beer, and watch Jack Ryan. I get 20 minutes into one episode and I had to stop because I could not get the subtitles to turn on. And you'd say,
That is terrible.
English subtitles, nothing. Closed caption for the hearing impaired because that worked last time, nothing. Restart the whole thing. Nothing. Like just it is wholly frustrating. And to dive into a little bit more of Jack Ryan, it's so frustrating because it is a phenomenal show. Have you seen any of it?
Of Jack Ryan?
Yes.
I've seen the first season. We have not started the second season yet.
Okay.
I loved every minute of that first
It
season.
is so good. Like I highly recommend it. If you live in a place where Amazon Prime works for you, then you need to check out Jack Ryan, even if you're not like a big, because it looks like in all the trailers and in all the posters, it looks like a military drama. And
And it is, but it isn't. It's more of a spy
it's a
drama.
spy drama, but it's a spy drama with the emphasis on Jack Ryan being an analyst. Like he's not really a field dude. So
He ends up in the field a few times and he's a former Marine, so he can handle himself.
right.
But at no point are you like, oh yeah, he's the guy that's going to go into that room and single-handedly take out nine guys and save the
No,
day.
exactly. Yeah. It's more about the hunt than it is about the actual capture or execution of the mission. It's more about getting to the point where you can launch that mission. That's the show. And I really, really enjoy it. Krasinski, who plays Ryan, does a wicked job of balancing that stat nerd with former Marine. Like he really does an excellent job. I mean, he's a good actor anyway. But it for me, and I realized after the f I would say I was about a halfway through the first season when I realized why the show was so appealing to me. And I've mentioned this on the Citadel Cafe the last few weeks, is that I'm really struggling with finding dramas to watch that are not so dark that they leave me just depressed or with no hope at the end of the episode. Things like Carnival Row and American Gods and all the things that kind of like highlight all the things that are wrong with society, but they give you no light at the end of the tunnel. I'm not saying these are bad shows. I'm saying they're very, very well produced, but they're very dark. And what I love about Jack Ryan is he's a Boy Scout. He is Captain America in the CIA, is how I would like to describe it. And it's one of those things where, like, when everybody else, because you're dealing with modern terrorist threats and biochemical weapons. I mean, shit goes sideways fast. But he is basically this, like, I have to fix it. I have to save the day at no, like, at no, you know, at all cost sort of thing. And, but do it the right way. And you're just like, yes, this is the, like, this is the kind of thing where you can latch onto something. It's like, okay, as much as this show is going down this dark road of modern warfare and what's going on in the world, because it has, like, you know, modern kind of political ties in terms of inspiration, but this Jack Ryan character really kind of pulls you in. It's like, okay, well, if we stick with him, not only could we maybe kind of win the day, but we'll feel good about it too. You know, we're not gonna be the seedy underbelly and still find ourselves on top, right? I'm really looking forward to finishing season two. I'm about 3 or 4 episodes in, but I can't because I don't speak Spanish.
Right.
It's so frustrating.
We really liked the first season, and I know that the second season came out. It's just been one of those things where we've been watching things that are far less serious.
Nice, yeah.
And so Erica has been in a very I need it to be funny kind of mood, and she loved the first season. Like, I made her watch the first episode, like, begrudgingly. She's like, I don't think I'm going to like this. I'm not a huge Tom Clancy fan. And I'm like, yeah, but let's give it an episode. And by the end of, like, the second episode, she's like, so I think we can binge this all in 2 days. And I'm like, probably.
I think one of the things that I think works so well about it, despite all of the things that I just said, I won't repeat myself, but Tom Clancy and CIA spy stuff works way better as series than it does movie. A movie, you know, unless you're doing a 3-part or 4-part movie. For example, like, I mean, I know this isn't Clancy, but the Bourne Identity stuff, like, those work as films, but they work even better as, like, a trilogy of films, or four, I guess there was. But this stuff, cause I went back, cause it was one of the things that I did find on Amazon Prime was some of the older Jack Ryan films like Clear and Present Danger with Harrison Ford and all that kind of stuff. They still work and they're still good, but they're more snapshot. Like, they don't have the depth in the plot that you have with the Ryan series. But anyway, I highly recommend it. What did you think of The Mandalorian?
I really, really liked The Mandalorian. I'm skeptical to say that I love it, because I feel like 40 minutes was not enough for me to give a solid opinion. 40 minutes was enough for me to go, okay, I'd like to see where this is going.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm eager to see what happens on Friday.
Me as well.
But I'm not chomping at the bit that, like it's not my, I'm not going to tell you it's the greatest thing I've ever seen on TV. It was really cool Star Wars, and I certainly liked it a whole lot more than I liked Last Jedi. But I don't know enough to tell you. I hope it sticks its landing.
Me as well. I mean, it's written by Jon Favreau, Iron Man fame, and as well as, unfortunately, things like The Lion King and The Jungle Book. But he's also done other things, and is in my mind a pretty talented director. Depending, like, for the franchises that I've been very interested in that he's been doing, he's nailed it. And so I have faith in that. I also really like Pedro Pascal, who played the Viper in Game of Thrones. He plays the Mandalorian. I mean, not that this is a spoiler, but he's in the mask the whole first episode. So, like, you don't even really get to see him. But the presence that he had, I felt was very unique. It still felt Star Warsy, and it still felt like Bounty Hunter, as everyone expects it to, but it felt like he brought his own flair to it a little, and it felt different, but not in a bad way. It felt like Star Wars at your fingertips, but because it's a new thing, we're going to try something a little bit different. Not so different that you're not going to like it, but it's not a Star Wars film. It does not have that feeling.
He's not Boba Fett.
No, exactly.
Like, you definitely get a vibe that there's some depth to his character.
Yes.
Which is what worried me, is I was like, are we just getting Boba Fett the TV show? And right. You don't. There's some flashbacks to his past.
Yep.
Or you find there's hints that, you know, he might not be crazy about the Imperials, and like you get a vibe that there's more to him than just I'm the bounty hunter.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah,
he's not just his job. Whereas as much as I like Boba Fett in the movies, he's a very two-dimensional character, and this gives you a vibe that this guy is more than two dimensions.
Yeah, exactly. There's even some humor in it, which is very cleverly placed. And I want to emphasize that, because I know that I've complained about the humor in some of the more recent Star Wars movies that pull you out of it. It's like modern jokes, and it pulls you out of that science fantasy, you know, Western sort of feel.
I can't emphasize it enough. I did not like Last Jedi.
Oh, no, I know. Yeah, so like all the stuff that was shoehorned into Last Jedi to try to make it a lighter film is where I really dislike, and they really lose me as a fan. But in this, I'll describe anything that was funny because it was banter. And I've come to start using the words or the phrase like Lethal Weapon humor. Like, it's the kind of stuff that Riggs and Murtaugh would be shouting at each other while they're being shot at. It's not like they're making jokes or forcing some joke about something completely unrelated into the conversation while they're driving down the street, right?
So I don't think it's spoiler to say this. So there's a droid in this episode.
Yes, yeah.
And the Mandalorian has to work with a droid. I was told that droid is voiced by Taika Waititi.
It is, yeah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
Because he's not listed in the credits for that on IMDb.
He's
listed in the episode, but they don't state it. If you look up, I was looking on IMDb last night.
They don't say who.
They don't say who's that droid.
Right. So, I guess the part of it that throws it is like it's also a droid. Like, it talks like a droid, not like a person. So it's also a bounty hunter droid. So it is like by the book. So it's all commands and communication. There's no fluff. It's not like it has a personality like C-3PO. Like it is straight data. And again, like we won't get into too much detail, but that was some of the funny in this episode
came from
the interactions with the droid, but not so much from the droid as it did with the frustration of the Mandalorian dealing with the droid. It wasn't Taika Waititi doing some stupid voice in a giant rock dude that drove me nuts in Thor Ragnarok. Like, it's not that. It's not shoehorned. It's just, it's Star Wars 100% from beginning to end with, I want to say, spaghetti Western thrown in.
Yeah, it feels like a traditional Western with maybe a little bit of spaghetti in there. Yeah.
The music for me was excellent in places and really odd. Odd choices in others.
There was one thing that, I guess, knowing that it bothered me at first until I found out that it takes place post-Return of the Jedi.
Yep.
Because they didn't do a good job in the first few minutes explaining to you when it takes place. And he freezes somebody in carbonite.
Mm-hmm.
And he does it like he does it all the time. And I was like, wait. The first time they did that was when Boba Fett does it to Han. They actually say they don't know if this is going to work.
Right.
And so when you see that it's kind of a thing. And then like 5 minutes later, they make a comment that tells you that it's post Return of the Jedi. And I was like, oh, okay. All right. Now I'm okay with it. But that weirded me out at first.
Yeah. I mean, and for people that are worried, this is in the first 5 minutes. Like, it's basically, they spend that time setting you up in terms of the timeline and stuff like that. Yeah. So, but yeah, it's and the Wikipedia page will say that it's set, after the fall of the Empire at the end of Return of the Jedi. So, which is cool because it means that you don't have that traditional conflict of person out in the universe trying to make their way, having to avoid and or deal with this gargantuan problem of the Empire being everywhere. And so I think it's going to be really interesting because in the Force Awakens, we had the First Order, which is basically the Empire 2.0. And so granted, it was comfortable, like people knew what to expect, but it was uninteresting. And now I feel like we have this potential to have this interesting underbelly take on, like, well, what happens to all of these stormtroopers and all these officers and all this stuff if they're no longer backed by the Empire, if they're just kind of on their own doing their own thing? How does that affect this area of space? And so I'm really curious to see where it's going to go. Production quality was super high. I mean, everything from, you know, animated aliens to, you know, prosthetic puppet stuff. Lots of really fun jokes that I won't spoil, but like just little nods, little setup shots, things that for anybody that is a Star Wars fan, it really is. It's meant to have surface level appeal for people that have not a deep fandom, but also a lot of Easter eggs for people that really like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I will say, if you're familiar with Favreau's work as a director or as a producer on other stuff, this is pretty much on par with his quality of work.
Yeah,
I feel like it's not a dip in quality in any way, shape, or form. If anything, it feels like it's kind of a step above and beyond.
Yeah, and it feels like we have a bounty hunter with, well, I'll say a twinkle of a conscience. I don't know enough yet. And given the emphasis that they put on the armor and the fact that we got a couple of flashbacks, I'm wondering whether we never see Pedro Pascal in current timeline outside of that helmet, if we only see him as an actor in flashbacks.
The rumor I've heard is he's never going to take that helmet off.
Interesting. I mean, I would be...
That's the rumor I've heard.
That would be hardcore. That would be in present day if he doesn't take the helmet off. Like, that would be interesting. Because, I mean, up until the very end, Vader didn't take it off. You know, like you didn't get to see what was under the mask. So that could be another kind of Star Wars tradition that's in there. Anyway, I'm curious to see how it goes.
They did it with Judge Dredd, that last Dredd movie.
You're right.
He never takes that helmet off. And I mean, you got to give him credit for that kind of thing. Because you know that some studio exec is screaming, no, make him take that helmet off. Was sick of staring at that stupid helmet. I want to see the actor's face. No, and they because you know, studio execs don't understand that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I think so. I'm curious to see how it's going to roll out. Speaking of the rollout, it is weekly. Next episode comes out this Friday, followed by Friday, November 22nd, November 29th, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. With the exception,
not a fan of this.
No, me either. With the exception of notably Wednesday, December 18th. Which is not to conflict with the release of Rise of Skywalker on Friday, December 20th. So Disney does not want you staying home and watching the 7th episode of The Mandalorian when you should be in theaters watching new Star Wars stuff, more new Star Wars stuff. What I think was so frustrating about it, and I don't necessarily know if this is a good thing, a bad thing, or a conditioned thing, is that I wanted to watch episode 2 tonight over dinner, and I couldn't.
Yep.
Because I'm used to stuff being at my fingertips. I'm used to being able to sit down and watch Jack Ryan when it works on a Friday night when I want to. I have the self-control. I also do not have the time to not binge something. So I'm not going to sit down and watch all 8 episodes of Jack Ryan in a day. I just can't. I get so frustrated with searching for something on Netflix or Amazon Prime or Disney Plus to suit my mood that when I find something, I'm like, okay, sweet. There's like 10 episodes. That's the next 10 days. If I'm home for dinner the next 10 days where I don't have to think about what I'm going to watch to chill out in the evening, I'm just going to hit next. So I have the self-control. Now, I understand from a business standpoint where Disney is giving a week's free trial and then people paying for a month. If you want people subbed for more than a month, then you take a huge show like The Mandalorian and you put it out weekly. That is a no-brainer. Like, I understand it. I'm just like, it's such a good show. I'm impatient. Plus, it's been a long time since I've had Star Wars at my fingertips, right?
Well, my gripe is I'm fine if they're going to do this week to week. My thing is they haven't told me about anything coming to the service come January that's going to make me excited to keep subscribing. So come January, I'm probably going to cancel it.
Well, I think between now and then you will hear of what's coming and when. There's also more than the Mandalorian. Now, granted, that's my main interest, but there's also The World According to Jeff Goldblum, which it's not at the top of my list, but I'm curious.
They're 30-minute episodes, so, I mean, that's going to be a no-brainer. That's going to be a like, oh, yeah, I'm making dinner. We'll put this on while I'm making dinner.
Right, yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'm thinking, I mean, Disney has enough experience that I certainly don't need to tell them how to do their job. But I'm sure that we'll probably get more information pass, right?
Disney has experience with the Disney Channel. And they have experience with movies. They do streaming is a different beast.
It is a different beast, but you got to remember, you've got Kevin Feige at the head of all of Marvel now, and so he's got the brains for how to handle this next, you know, era of Marvel entertainment, which is going to include streaming content. And so, knowing when that kind of stuff and getting information about when that's coming out, I think is going to be key to all of this. For example, and I apologize to whether I've read this somewhere as this is a thing or whether it's just a tweet or something that I've read that is not necessarily a good source. But I feel like there could be a combination of things happening with Disney Plus where instead of everything being weekly, some stuff will be weekly, more than likely their biggest, most popular things. But then other things will just be like, bam, here's the whole season. Binge it if you want it. It's brand new. Like, so I'm not talking about archive stuff. I'm talking about like, no, this is brand new. But you know what? For this one, we get it all out at once. And for this other thing, well, we're going to do that weekly because we feel like it's better business. And I, given the price point, given the quality of the content that I've seen so far, not that I've watched, but like the stuff that I've browsed and looked through, I mean, I'm going to stay at least through Christmas. I mean, like it's less than a pint.
I was surprised. If you haven't watched Runaways, Runaways is up there now on Disney Plus, and that's a Hulu exclusive here in the U.S.
Oh, interesting. I'll have to check that. I'm not sure what that is.
It's very teenage angsty, but we've watched the first two seasons, and we enjoyed it.
Oh, you've mentioned this on the show before. This is the Marvel Runaways, like the kids with superpowers thing?
Yeah, they each one has a power or something that they realize they can do. And their parents are all like supervillains. Right. And they didn't realize it. Okay. And so they run away.
That sounds spot on.
I mean, that's literally, I mean, I can't tell you much more than much that more without than that. Spoiling.
No, of course. No, I just find it like, so it is what it says in the tin. It's very interesting.
Yeah, I'm curious because Freeform also used to have Cloak and Dagger.
Right.
Which got canceled. There's rumor that that might get picked up again by either Disney Plus or Hulu, that Freeform itself just didn't want to continue to pay to make it anymore. But that was, I watched the first few episodes of that. We didn't stick with it just because something better came out. We never went back. But it wasn't a bad show. It was kind of a murder mystery thing going on in the Marvel universe. It was okay.
Cool. Well, I mean, I will be definitely keeping tabs on what's happening with Disney Plus. I actually started watching Endgame tonight over dinner just because I wanted something comfortable. And it's the kind of thing that you want to break up into a couple sittings anyway, when you have the opportunity to do so. So yeah, I mean, I'm excited to have a lot of this kind of stuff at my fingertips. And I'm excited that the quality from my phone was actually really good being AirPlayed across the living room. I was not hopeful given my previous experience with tech lately. But yeah, I'm going to be keeping a close eye on Disney Plus. I'm thinking very heavily about doing some bonus stuff around The Mandalorian, so we don't have to skirt around spoilers every week. So keep an eye out for that. I'll let you know.
I will be more than happy to join you in those conversations.
Cool. We might be doing that for someone, oh, I don't know, like our patrons. If you enjoy the show and you'd like to maybe help us make more stuff, like maybe bonus Mandalorian episodes, then head on over to the Citadel Cafe .com, and then you can also link over to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to support the show. It's completely up to you. There's a number of people that support at various levels across the board. What that gets you is access to the members-only Discord, which is where we talk about nerdy stuff all week long, including some stuff like Minecraft Earth that just launched in Canada and the US over the last week or two. We've also got a lot of just video game chatter, and of course, a lot of talk about Disney Plus and talk about Amazon Prime and stuff, and Black Friday coming into the holidays, video games, all that kind of thing. So if you head over to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe, there's details on how to do that there. We are currently at 17 patrons. I'd like to be 18 before the end of November, so maybe that's you. But if you like the show, head on over there, let us know what you think. If you have any questions, please feel free to drop me a line. More than happy to answer them along the way. If you want to find out more about this episode, head to thecitadelcafe.com, where you can find notes and links to all the things that Lou and I talked about today. Music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod. You can email us at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. Find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. And while you're out there, subscribe on things like Android, iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify. The list goes on. Basically, wherever you can find a podcast. And when you tell friends, hey, this was a cool show, you can tell them. It's easy to find. Just look for The Citadel Cafe. Find us just about anywhere. As for me, same thing. My name on the internet. You will find me. But start at joelduggan.com and then look at the shop, because I've got prints and things that you might want to maybe have shipped for Christmas. And I'm a small operation, as is my fulfillment partner. So if you want a print for Christmas, the sooner the better. And that's at joelduggan.com. You can find links to the other podcasts I do, social media. It's all there. Lou, where can people find you online?
The easiest place to find me is on social media under the name Busy Zombie Lord. I am pretty much everywhere. I don't post as much as I should. I'm trying to change that. I apologize now. But you can also check out my show, Zombies Ate My Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts from. And I should say, this week's episode for us was really good. If you have not checked it out on Netflix, before you listen to our show, watch at least the first few episodes of Daybreak, a zombie apocalypse with Matthew Broderick.
You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.